A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sim. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 158. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion of Cold Lazarus. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, that's right. Cold Lazarus, a four-part co-production between the BBC and Channel 4 here in the UK, which was broadcast in 1996. As I say, four parts, each about an hour long.
Yes, it was written by the very well-regarded British TV writer Dennis Potter, and it was connected quite closely to his previous four-part serial, Karaoke. Karaoke was not really a science fiction story, although it arguably had a little bit of science fiction to it. But the two of them sit together as Dennis Potter's final set of work.
Yes, and important for that reason, his final work. And as you say, they are quite closely linked. So in order to get to the science fiction story of Cold Lazarus, you probably do need to watch Karaoke first and get the setup from that, I think.
Yes, and it's well worth watching as well.
Okay, so here we have Cold Lazarus. We've got this strange dystopian view of the future, 24th century Britain, where gangs roam the streets, but meanwhile the privileged rich live indoors mostly. We get the idea that things are sort of dominated by television, and there's a lot of other stuff going on as well.
Yes, we have American corporations who are controlling television and the media, and experiences that are considered authentic and more real-life experiences are either forbidden or highly restricted. So it's very much, you do things as the media gives them to you or in very limited, restricted ways. And this team of scientists has been researching and looking at the memories of the writer Daniel Field from the previous drama by looking at Daniel Field's frozen head from the 20th century.
That's right, yes. Albert Finney, caked in makeup as a frozen head in a tank with all sorts of tubes and piping coming out of him, and his memories being projected up on a big screen for this team of scientists to examine. And as you say, we've got this strange thing about authentic experiences going on, and how they are frowned upon, but at the same time, they're being explored by some of the corporations and executives. There's a scene where a couple of executives drink coffee, and coffee is an authentic, or defined as an authentic experience. And there's something sort of illicit and a bit contraband about it, Brian.
Yes, it very much has these ideas of the corporations exerting all of this control over what people can experience.
And that leads us to an organization known as RON, R-O-N, which stands for Reality or Nothing, which seems to be a group of political extremists, or maybe even terrorists as they're defined by the authorities, who are trying to get more authentic experiences available to everybody, not just to a few privileged elite. And there's a suggestion that someone inside the scientific team researching Daniel Field's memories is linked to this RON organization, and that the RON organization are interested in the head and the experiences. But so are the super rich corporations, who very definitely want to step in and control this particular scientific project. And I suppose, Brian, they're looking to exploit it for their own uses, really.
Yes, the preserved memories from the 20th century have become this sort of valuable commodity because they're so different than this very controlled environment of the future that's being painted here. So you have this contention over who can use these memories and have access to Daniel Field's head and so on.
Okay, so there's lots of competing agendas as they try to control this bit of research, and different people want it for different reasons. And then we've got the setting of a rather strange-looking future, I guess, Brian.
Yes, it's quite detailed and rather interesting. It's this rather bleak version of the future with this sort of these highly controlled things, and the transportation is all sort of in very controlled ways, and everything's limited for who can go into what building and who can go on to what train to go to what building, and this very sort of controlled way, and it's done with this set of, you know, painted cityscapes and the computer graphics from the 1990s and so on, that gives you this sort of quite intense and quite detailed look at this vision of the future.
Yes, that's right. We've got the cityscapes, which I suspect, as you say, Brian, they look like paintings, I think, which have probably been matted in, I guess.
Some of them probably are, yeah.
We've got hover cars, and they appear to be physical effects. So I suspect that they are on some kind of rig that, again, has been taken out of the shot. But we have cars that are hovering around, controlled by computer or robot, I guess. So people just speak their destinations and away they go. And then we've got these strange pod-like chairs that the scientists sit in and move around in. It's a bit slightly strange, an odd-looking laboratory, Daniel Field's head in this giant tank, a big screen that his memories are projected up on, and then the scientists sitting in these weird, almost organic-looking chairs, which they seem to be able to control and move around in. A bit strange-looking, Brian.
Yes, it was actually sort of a strange set of imagery that was very interesting and set this version of the future as being something very foreign to us, which I think was quite neat.
And then we've got the costume department. Obviously, when you get something set in the future, we need to have some futuristic looking outfits, and here they've gone for the sort of the robe wearing view of the future. So some slightly sort of stylized costumes, flowing robes. Occasionally we see characters at some sort of social events where they've got lots of elaborate hats and so on. And some interesting fabrics being used as well. So that's the sort of view of the future they've gone for in terms of the elite clothing.
But then they also have these paramilitary type police all in black with helmets, and you have the executives and the scientists sort of being kept separate from what's almost like the rabble and sort of street punks, or you know, these different sort of violent people. And you have a bit of I don't know, is that Mad Max meets Judge Dredd or something like that?
Those would be two very good comparisons, Brian. Yes, I mean, whenever we get rioting street gangs, we tend to get this Mad Max sort of street punk look. And as you say, the sort of the black-clad police force with their helmets and their pads, and they do recall Judge Dredd from the comic books. And the other thing that this sort of show reminded me, which I'm just sort of occurs to me as I'm talking about it now, is the look of the future and the police, and then these sort of elaborately costumed elite people remind me a bit of Terry Gilliam's film Brazil and the way that depicts the future, Brian.
Yes, there was a little bit of that in it. I did like how there was quite a bit of variety to the future as it was shown, that the scientists in their lab was, you know, very different from the executives. And then when they had things sort of in a club or bar type place, it had a different look and feel to it. And then the stuff out in the street was then a little different. So it felt more like a realized world rather than just sort of a few little snapshots where everything looks the same.
Okay, very interesting stuff. Another TV show that it reminded me of was Nigel Neal's The Year of the Sex Olympics.
Ah, yes.
Which, of course, we've talked about and both enjoyed. And that, again, had this ruling class, and it had this idea that the masses were perhaps being controlled by television, and this introduction of the new sort of authentic elements into a new experience, possibly for TV viewers. That's something that the corporations seem to be trying to exploit with Daniel Field's head and his memories. So interesting similarities and comparisons there as we go along.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, it seems that Daniel Field, or what's left of him in this this brain, is becoming aware. And he's not just this collection of memories, but he is actively there and thinking, and he's aware that people are rummaging around through his memories, and he's starting to try to communicate. So there is some fairly strange stuff in there that is quite neat.
It is strange and interesting. As you say, this idea that Field begins to realize what's going on. And I know we try very hard to avoid spoilers when we're talking about these shows. And this is perhaps a slight spoiler for Karaoke, but it does sort of give us some clues as to what might have been going on with some of the unanswered questions in Karaoke, Brian.
Yes.
You know, it is linked, and it does give you that sort of slight science fiction link back to Karaoke.
That's right. Now, some of these kinds of ideas of control in society and the media and so on, some of these dystopian ideas have come up in other British shows over the years. And we've been thinking a little bit about similar ideas. And as you mentioned, Damon, The Year of the Sex Olympics was very much about using the media for control and the idea that everything people would see was from the media. So if you controlled that and used sort of very manipulative things in television, you could sort of have society behave the way you wanted to, which there are sort of similar elements in this.
That's right. Yes, as we say, one of a show from one of our favorite writers here on British Invaders. And yeah, there are similarities. And if you liked The Year of the Sex Olympics, you might like Cold Lazarus and vice versa. So perhaps shows to check out.
Yeah, Year of the Sex Olympics. Well, we covered it in British Invaders 69 and 70, but it was from the late 1960s. So it's sort of an earlier take on that sort of idea.
Okay. Also from the 1960s, if we're looking for comparisons and considering shows that we've recorded, we looked at the series or the anthology series Out of the Unknown, and it reminded me in particular of the episode The Machine Stops, which again showed this sort of rather strange, sterile, indoors society of the future where things are sort of controlled by what they watch on their screens. And this feeling that somewhere outside there is the real or the authentic world, which they may need to reconnect with. So, you know, perhaps not my favourite episode from Out of the Unknown, but certainly one of the better known episodes that survive.
Yes, and one that has some interesting things and interesting ideas in it, as many of the episodes did.
Okay, and we'll mention one more. Back in British Invaders 94 and 95, we covered The Flip Side of Dominic Hyde, which I believe was a BBC Play for Today, or in their Play for Today strand, that had this, again, this idea of a future society wanting to look back and learn from 20th century British society, and of course the device there was time travel, which is slightly different, but had a similar feel, I think, Brian.
Well, it was a very different show, and you know, a very different type of genre, you know, with sort of character comedy and character interaction being involved in a very different way, but it does have some ideas in common.
Okay, interesting stuff. And if you know of other shows that this might be related to or similar to, or you can think of other comparisons, then do let us know.
Yes, that would be a lovely discussion to have on the Facebook group.
If we can do anything at all with Daniel.
Emma?
She'll cut us off. I sense it. I know it in my bones. That witch, Martina Matilda Masden. We simply won't be able to afford any submicroscopic modifications of any of Daniel's surviving brain circuits. We may as well throw him in the bin.
Surely, if we show what can be done, what we've already done.
The first time ever anyone has broken into a head with any memory from near antiquity. Well, surely she cannot stand in the way
She's not. The company is not in the slightest degree interested in science for its own sake. We stand about as much chance of being able to continue.
The table quickly.
So, getting into some of our feelings about this, the good and the bad, or maybe the hot and the cold this time. Eamon, what did you like about Karaoke and Cold Lazarus?
Well, we've mentioned it as we've gone along, Brian, but the people involved are really quite impressive. I mean, we do have a very high-powered, stellar cast for both these shows, don't we?
Yes, and it shows in the performances. There are some very good performances in this.
Absolutely. So we've got Albert Finney, who's very good in both. Francis de la Tour and Kieran Hines are very good in Cold Lazarus. I think all the cast of Karaoke were fantastic, really. So, yeah, interesting people, Brian.
Yes, for sure. The cast was definitely very good in both of these. I think especially in Karaoke. The writing, the stories and scripts in these, I think were very interesting. There was some real depth there. The character journey and multiple character journeys that happen in Karaoke, I think, are very good, and there's some genuine depth there that is really enjoyable to see. And then in Cold Lazarus, they sort of turn that inside out and look at character and character journey, but in a very different way, as we're sort of looking at bits and pieces of Daniel Field's life. And then at the same time, looking at where other characters stand and looking at these sort of political ideas and media control ideas. So it's interesting to have a very different set of ideas and two very different stories that have these very definite ties into each other.
Yeah, interesting stuff. And of course, as we've said, Dennis Potter, very much a writer who wrote about what he knew himself. So we know that he had stuff about his psoriasis and his arthritis in previous shows. And here in this show, we know what happened to Dennis Potter 2 years before its production. And Daniel Field going through that same process, it's difficult really not to see the parallels, Brian.
Yes, it's very much Daniel Field and Dennis Potter dealing with mortality and dealing with being in this inoperable cancer situation, and you know, sort of the end being near. And that was something that was dealt with very well and gave us some interesting stuff for sure. And then you get to Cold Lazarus, and it's more about the legacy and memory. You know, okay, we had this writer, the screenwriter that we got to know in Karaoke. Well, in Cold Lazarus, we get to look at his life and work being deconstructed from the future. So it's almost as if he were thinking about his legacy there.
Yeah, interesting. Yes, that's right. Potter thinking about what would people make of his work in the future. Yeah, interesting. What about the production and the sort of look and sound and feel of this show, Brian? What did you like there?
Well, it's interesting. Of course, for karaoke, we had sort of a standard present day sort of thing, very, very well done. And then we're introduced in Cold Lazarus to this very involved futuristic world, which I quite liked, actually, for a few reasons. One is that it has this great variety to it, where the setting of the lab is very different from the settings of people's homes and the sort of bar or restaurant, nightclub type place they go to, which is also different from sort of the streets and in the vehicles, and also different from where the big corporate people are somewhere else. And then the different groups of people, these wealthy corporate types versus the scientists versus the police who we see a little bit of and the people out in the streets. They're sort of very different looks and feels, and I like that thoroughness that they had sort of realized quite a bit of this world in just these four episodes. And I like the fact that these vehicles were done with physical effects and the sort of chair pods were physical effects. So you had lots of sort of very solid and real seeming types of things. That was very nice. It felt like a quite a lavish, well-realized world to me, and I rather enjoyed that.
Okay. And of course, we do like physical effects and matte paintings for cityscapes, perhaps a bit more than CGI. So this was obviously before the real impact of CGI, and we get them doing this stuff all on set. An interesting variety, as you say, particularly the laboratory, where they've gone for this strangely organic look and feel to it, which contrasts with some of the sort of corporate and social situations that we see.
Yes.
Okay. Anything that stood out to you as perhaps not so good about this production, Brian?
Well, there isn't a lot. The biggest thing is probably the difference between karaoke and Cold Lazarus. We're going from one to the other, but the two are so vastly different that it's a little bit of a shock going from one to the other. And while certainly you have Daniel Field and his memories being the link back to karaoke, you have quite a different feel to the cast and the dialogue and the sort of look and feel of the second serial versus the first one. So it was that sort of difference there that I thought was a little bit jarring.
Yes, and of course we've got karaoke, which is, I guess, very familiar stuff for Dennis Potter, writing about what he knew, writing about the present day as it was then. And then we've got this jump to the future, the 24th century, and to an area that he'd never really explored before. He'd never really gone in for science fiction. And perhaps it's the script, or maybe it's the way the production company or the production team chose to go, that it does sort of jar slightly, and I was sort of a bit disappointed that they went for some familiar looking tropes, particularly the sort of helmeted stormtrooper type police that we see so much of. I thought we'd seen that a few too many times. And likewise, the long robes and the elaborate hats, which I sort of familiar from Brazil and so many others. But so there were some jars there between the two productions, I guess.
Yes, I do think Dennis Potter wrote better dialogue for karaoke than he did for Cold Lazarus, and perhaps better characters and story work. And that's probably because, as you say, karaoke was very much his familiar type of setting and place that he was working with. While Cold Lazarus was certainly good, and the writing, the performances, they were all good, I think they were generally better in karaoke. And a lot of that comes down to how Potter wrote the two of them, and perhaps to the cast, because certainly karaoke had a phenomenal cast, where maybe Cold Lazarus merely had a good cast or a very good cast rather than one that was quite up there. But nonetheless, both are still very good shows.
Okay. Yes, he does try a little bit of future speak for Cold Lazarus. And of course, that always... I think actors sometimes struggle with that a bit themselves, whereas the more naturalistic dialogue we saw in Karaoke gives them more to work with in a way.
Yes, and he was able to bring his characters to life in Karaoke in a very convincing way, because these were, I don't know if these were types of people he had met or just things that he knew about, but they were characters that really did seem quite real.
Yes, you do get the feeling that the the literary agent and the film director and the actors and actresses, probably based on some of his own experiences yet again, and we get this weird film within a film, which is quite interesting and exciting in a way. So lots of good stuff in Karaoke.
Yeah, so that's probably the weakest things from my point of view with Cold Lazarus are really that it's following on from Karaoke. But it's still definitely a very good production.
Okay. Wonder whether or not it is Dennis Potter's best work, whether it is his best legacy. I guess it's, shows like Pennies from Heaven and The Singing Detective have such a great reputation here on British TV that it's difficult in a way for them, for Cold Lazarus in particular, to stand up to them, I guess.
Yes, that may be.
I think it's very good that the, just one last plus point though, again, that here in the UK, thanks to Channel 4's 4OD, you can watch both shows for free. And I have checked, they are up there. I have watched episodes on there myself.
Yeah, that's great that they're available.
Pity they're not available in Canada.
Well, yes.
That way.
So I think this leads us nicely into our recommendations.
Interesting stuff.
So, yes, Eamon, what would you like to recommend for this?
I'd like to recommend Karaoke. Which I think is a great show. It doesn't really fit into our genre, though, to our remit, but that's very interesting. I did struggle a bit more with Cold Lazarus myself. I don't think it's vintage Dennis Potter. I think still The Singing Detective is probably his best show and his lasting legacy. But there are some interesting bits and pieces going on in there. And knowing what happened to Dennis Potter himself, it's quite poignant stuff, really, to watch him writing about a writer, dealing with his own mortality and wondering how his work would be looked upon in the future. So... as it's available for free, I will give a cautious recommendation here in the UK and say, do go and check out Karaoke. And once you've watched that, I think you probably will want to go on and complete the series with Cold Lazarus, Brian. What about yourself?
I'm going to more or less agree with that. Karaoke is definitely better and well worth seeing. I think Cold Lazarus is also quite good. It's quite different and has sort of a strange way of fitting in. But I would say they're both worth watching if you do have access to the 4OD online versions or you're able to get a hold of this. They're good, solid drama, and I would say, worth taking a look at.
Okay, interesting stuff. And as ever, if you agree or disagree with what we've said about these two shows, we'd love to hear from you. If you decide to watch them after hearing our reviews, please get in touch. We will be having a bonus show coming out, hopefully not too far in the future, where we'll be hopefully including some feedback, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. So, in summary, Karaoke was a four-part story that looked at the writer Daniel Field, who was clearly near the end of his life, and dealing with his personal life, his health, and his script being turned into a movie, and the director wanting to change things and do things that are different from what Field himself wanted. And it deals with this interesting web of characters and things that they're doing with films and so on. That was continued in Cold Lazarus, which was much more of a science fiction story set in the 24th century with the head and the brain of Daniel Field now preserved, and a number of scientists are now able to look at his memories as a way to observe the past, the 20th century, and to see what it was like. And we get the idea that this world is one where things are very restricted, and people are only allowed to see things that are given to them by the media, and they're only allowed to experience certain things. And the discovery of these preserved memories fit into this and become a major point of contention.
Okay, absolutely fascinating stuff. An interesting show, which I've sort of got to watch really through British Invaders. Good stuff.
Yes, interesting stuff for sure.
And next time, we are jumping considerably, going back to a show that's probably not got such a good reputation, Brian. And it's a show that we've been asked to cover by some of our listeners. We're going back to 1975 to ITV, and we're looking at a show called Star Maidens. Is it a piece of cheesy 1970s science fiction, or is it an overlooked feminist gem, Brian? We'll find out.
Yes, tune in next time for, that'll be an interesting one to talk about for sure.
Quite a jump.
Yes. So you can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us on BritishInvaders.com. We are a member of the Geek Culture Network, so thegeekculturenetwork.com. We are one of the podcasts there. And if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find our Facebook group, where we have lots of fun discussions going on about various British science fiction things.
Yes, lots of active discussions going on Facebook all the time, with people posting ideas, comments and pictures. So do join us there. Or join us at vognetwork.com, the Voice of Geeks streaming internet radio, where we have a regular Monday and Tuesday night slot. And once again, welcome to all our Vognet listeners.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. And until next time, this is Eamon, the singing doctor, and I'll be miming along to Baby It's Cold Outside.